Everything changed at home. Sweet Liberty. Or is it a stain of my life?
Never forget. You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, as it always is, when we're on the air now, because we are on every Wednesday at 9 p.m. on First Amendment Radio, and today is the 21st of March in the year 2007. And our spiritual message tonight is from A Course in Miracles. I just pulled this just before I dialed in. It's from the text, page 511. I like this. Listen to this. Nothing you undertake with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence, holding your brother's hand and keeping step to heaven's song, is difficult to do. I'm going to do that once more. Nothing you undertake with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence, holding your brother's hand and keeping step to heaven's song, is difficult to do. And that's something good for me to remember. Our guest again this evening, folks, is Robert Allen. Robert was on with us last week, and we were talking because his work involves the educational. Robert works for a company that sells physical activity games for the schools, and private and public schools. And because of that, he sat in on some seminars, and even though he had an awareness of the government educational system, he's heard things that are disturbing, that things that I wanted you to know. One of the things we discussed last week was a program that they're doing, and I forget what the name of it used to be, but now it's called, what is it called, Robert?
Which program?
Combatant.
I'm sorry?
Combatant.
Oh, yeah, the Combatant.
The Combatant.
Actually, it's a revision of the standards, and it's one segment of it now called Combatant.
Yeah, well, thanks for being on with us tonight again.
Well, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you do remember that you're not going to talk too fast, are you, Robert?
I'm going to talk slow and clear and precise.
And, you know, I'm sorry to report to you, you sent me that website about the Y generation.
Yes.
And I honestly intended to get into it and did not. But, you know, the generation today is referred to as the X generation.
Sure.
Alan Watt, you know, just said, well, there's no future for them. You know, because I said, why are they calling it the X generation? I don't know why. And then you found that they're also referring to the Y generation.
Well, yeah, they've actually named the next generation after that.
What is that?
They call it two things. They call it the Z generation.
The Z generation.
And they also call it the new silent generation. And then a last sort of name that they're grappling with or playing with is called the homeland generation.
Oh, is that in that website you linked?
Yes.
Oh, Robert.
Yeah, and that you know, they're not sure yet on how to classify them yet, because they haven't really it's been more of their process of classifying them as opposed to that generation, you know, representing specific characteristics.
Remember
yet,
when
do.
You mentioned the Y generation, and I said I wonder if there's going to be a Z.
Yes.
And there is a Z.
You're exactly right.
And that Z, or is it after the Z, that is the silent generation?
No, they're saying it's the same one.
That's whatever that means. It sounds creepy. I mean,
well, the silent means like they probably won't ever say anything.
Well, yeah.
And that means because they probably won't have access to things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's not a good thing. You always want people to be able to say what they say.
Wow. Well, maybe it's because they won't have thoughts of their own. How's that?
That's what I'm thinking, too. Exactly.
That's that's what their plan is, that, you know, with the, you know, I got an email from somebody that it's this wonderful news that now 500 hospitals are using the VeriChip on their patients.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
No, I didn't get, but I had heard that they're getting ready to go public, so.
Uh-huh. So, well, now they have 500 hospitals signed up. That was the first day of a three-day symposium or whatever they were having, and they said that they expected a whole lot more to come on online, and they're using it. Now, they're talking about the readers. See, VeriChip is providing all of this stuff free.
Mm-hmm.
The hospitals aren't paying for it.
Sure.
And so, therefore, if they have the readers, that means that they must implant the chip into that patient when that patient is admitted into the hospital in order to have to use a reader.
Yeah. You have to have something to read with a reader. Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely that, you know, it's interesting. That seems to be, as I started looking a little bit more into some of what we were talking about last week, too, I came across a couple interesting things, and one of them was, you know, here in the States, there's a national organization for PE and also for...
For what? Education. For what, Robert?
For physical education.
Oh, PE, okay.
Yeah, and it's called AAPERD, or basically AAHPERD. It stands for the American Alliance for Health and Physical Education. And basically, they're the ones that...
Now, what is it called?
It's called AAPERD.
AAPERD.
Yes. Well, actually, AAPERD is how you would say A-H. A-A-H-P-E-R-D.
A herd.
Kind of.
A-H-E-R.
Actually, there's a P in there. So it's A-A-H-P-E-R-D. And it stands for American Alliance for Health, Physical Education, Recreation, and Dance. And they do a lot of the they're the national sort of parent organization that represents physical education interests at the school level. And they're tied to another group called NASB, which helps to create...
Called what?
NASB, which is N-A-S-P-D. And it's a sanctioning organization that works to create what are the standards. So together they take the standards and shape them and then state by state implement them. But in just looking at that, I was kind of, you know, looking at, I was definitely familiar with both of those groups. We did a lot with each of them. But I looked in, I was on the AAPERD site and I came across this other site for one of their international partners called the International Council of Sport, Science, and Physical Education. So there's ICSSP, so another acronym. And I just was looking at their information, and they're actually tied to some of our favorites, again, UNESCO.
Okay, there you go.
The World Health Organization, International.
Okay.
Sports Medicine. Okay. So, and when you really get into it, a lot of the standards-based stuff is based on understanding and breaking down movement. The actual physiology of the body and how it moves and why, you know, specific body types do better than others and, you know, what makes them do that. And they're trying to define all of the intricacies that are involved with physiology. And so if you just ask why they would be doing that, you know...
I would. That was what I was wondering.
Yeah, a few answers pop in. But, if, you know, when you're designing chips when they did the automotive retooling in Detroit, when they were designing the chips on the line to replace the workers, they had to understand, you know, all the ways that...
What the workers were doing.
Yeah, what the movements were and how to, you know, effectively accomplish those things through movement. So, you know, I'm imagining that that's one application for some of what they're doing. Obviously, they're not publishing anything. Saying
and this is all associated with the... Government indoctrination centers.
You bet.
And, that we call schools.
Exactly. But it all goes back to the international group. Yeah, and the international group is based out of Berlin, and then they have a roving body of folks that are all over Europe and America. But it's and also tied to the International Olympic Committee as well. So.
Do you believe that if you leave your 10-year-old twins in school, that they will escape what the plan is for them?
Oh no. Well, I think indoctrination, you know, happens in the first few years of school, and then it's just a matter of the strengthening of those ideas. So the answer is no. I don't think they'll escape it. I think, you know, if with everything that we do and everything that we, you know, hope to do, that we can be able to lessen some of those effects, but a lot of them are there. And I see them. You know, I actually see a lot of the indoctrination in me. I went through the public school system myself. So, you know, but I, you know, the whole time I was going through it, like most people, you're experiencing it, and that little voice says, boy, this doesn't seem right. You know, this doesn't seem like this would be something that a teacher would do, or that a school should do. But still, you're forced into complying and going along with what the rest of the group does, because the pain is so great if you don't. The emotional pain. And back actually when I was younger, the physical pain too. We used to actually still get the board. You know, I remember being in kindergarten and being called to the office and getting hit with the board. So, I mean, they don't do that anymore here, but they used to do that.
Yeah. No, that stopped very soon after the Rights of the Child. The United Nations Rights of the Child was voted in.
Sure.
And, of course, parents, you know, you see children running around in grocery stores and running into people's baskets and just acting like little animals, and the parents. My daughter told me this, and she's your age.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, give them a smack on the butt in the store, Mom, you're going to lose your child.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, then quit taking them to the store, for God's sake. I mean, you know, they love to go to the store with you. Mm-hmm. Then quit taking them.
Yeah.
But this is the way it is today. The child has rights.
I think there's so many extremes. It's so wild. It's just interesting to observe, but I think a lot of parents feel like they need to overcompensate the other way too. So then you have that happening where they just let them, you know, run wild. And again, you know, there's a lot of, you know, social conditioning that happens at that level too. If you see somebody, you know, going after their child, certainly part of you wants to not let that happen, but you don't understand, a lot of times people don't understand the whole dynamic, and then, you know, there's the issue of being physical in the first place, so that, and that could be debated forever.
Oh my God, I'm sorry. Oh man, I am so sorry.
It's okay.
Oh, that's Molly. She Jeff, let them out, please. She stands in the... Pardon? Okay. She stands in the window and guards the property.
Sure.
And she sees a critter out there. And she just has to get out and chase it out of the yard.
Sure.
And she just knocked the plant over when she ran.
Sure.
Now,
but, you know, some of the other things I found that were kind of interesting, too, that looking into the, we talked a little bit about the test that's going to be applied to all incoming freshmen here.
Say that again, Robert.
The test that we talked about last week that everybody will have to take here in California. Actually, they use it nationally, but it's called the FitnessGram, and it's put together by the Cooper Institute. You remember we talked about
that? Oh, yeah.
So
Kenneth Cooper?
Yeah, exactly. So
you think he's part of it?
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah.
He actually does he does all of the entrance exams for the military.
Okay.
And he does them for the police.
Well, he certainly knows his aerobic stuff, doesn't he?
He does. And then if you look at, their board of directors, it's all, you know, PepsiCo, the CEO.
Okay.
The president of PepsiCo, uh-huh, and Taco Bell and all those places. And those are all the groups that were selling food into the school system in the first place that got, you know, the entire thing going in that wrong direction. So, you know, I'm sure they're all interested now. they were the ones that that were behind the initial creation of the problem of the child's obesity issue. So,
I really regret that I didn't get into that. I have company coming, so I've gotten into a cleaning mode.
Mm-hmm.
I regret that I didn't go into that website that you linked over to me about
sure.
the Y generation.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's anybody that can be contacted to explain what they mean by the silent generation.
Well, they say that the term, and this is what they say on the site, they say the term is a reflection of Howe and Strauss's theory that the characteristics of American generations are cyclical, and that the generation currently born will share the characteristics with the silent generation born in the span of the years 1925 to 1945. So they say that it's going to mimic that cycle again.
Oh, well, you know what was going on then, don't you remember?
Sure.
The huge depression.
Exactly.
The terrible depression,
exactly.
where people were so caught up trying to keep themselves and their families alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I, another thought I have, too, that just entered my mind is, you know, that they want world peace.
Right.
And according to V.I. Lenin, that peace is a total absence of resistance to their plan.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not resisting, you would be being silent, wouldn't you? And do they have a timeline here? I mean, with the Y generation, what is the Y generation the younger than the Z's now?
Yeah,
I mean
actually,
the X's.
The Y generation is from 1970 to 1990s, and then within that is a subset called the Millennials. And they're 1982 to 2000.
So you were just in the X generation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so was Nicole. So then her babies, your babies, are part of the Y generation.
Mm-hmm.
And what does the Y generation signify?
Y generation, actually, Y generation immediately is a term for people born immediately after Generation X.
That's fine, but do they say
terms.
What does it mean? The Y generation.
The Anglophone world or the people worldwide, I guess is what they say.
The what? Anglo?
Anglophone world or the people worldwide.
Anglophone?
Yeah.
What is that?
I'll tell you the whole thing.
Anglophone.
Anglophone is someone who speaks English language natively by adoption. It means English speaking, referring to groups or places. So,
Anglophone. You know, that's a ruse.
Yeah.
Given that over here, you know, that big, this is years ago, that USA Today had a big banner headline, front page, if you don't speak Spanish, you may be left behind.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that the Y generation is 70 to 90.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Z generation are those born after 1990?
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah. Actually, from, they say 1995, or actually 94, excuse me, through present.
94 through present.
Actually, they say 2001 to be determined, so they don't know how long that took.
Okay.
But they have a lot of little subsets within it. They have the millennial generation, they have the echo boom generation, which is 82 to 95, and then they have the internet generation, which they say is 94 to 2001. And then the new silent generation, they say, is the 90s through the 2000s, question mark.
Yeah, it's a wonder they didn't say to 2012.
Yeah.
You've seen that, haven't you?
Oh, you bet, yeah.
I mean, the Diebold committee that met, Ross Perot was on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that, I think Linda Liotta pulled it out of the archives at in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had their report. She copied it and faxed it over to me,
mm-hmm.
or sent it to me, and they've got it all laid out. You know, what is going to be happening on a world scale,
mm-hmm.
Up until 2012, and then it quits.
Mm. Yeah.
And I've been very curious what the 2012 means to them. It is said that the Inca, or the calendar, the
yeah.
what?
Inca calendar? I think it's the Mayan calendar, yeah.
The what?
The Mayan.
The Mayan, thank you.
Yeah.
That it stops at 2012.
Sure.
But is that true, or is it just something we've been told? I have looked at a Mayan calendar. It means nothing to me.
Right.
Have you ever looked at one?
Oh, you bet. Yeah, I have one.
Can you make it out?
I don't think anybody can.
So, yeah, thank you.
I think it's just, you know,
another ruse.
Yeah, I think it's another, you know, sort of prophetic date that's put out there, and we all kind of. But it's interesting though, because you look at, like I was looking at something about what was going on in South Korea. We were doing some more diplomatic stuff over there, and apparently, you know, we still are part of a coalition that...
Who's we?
The United States.
Oh, you're saying U.S., okay.
Yeah,
I don't...
Exactly.
I don't include myself in part of that.
Sure, huh? Sure. I should say the United States. Yeah,
yeah,
part
the United
of
militarily, States.
Militarily, you know, guiding that country still since the conflict in the 50s. And apparently, you know, they're upset with us because we won't turn it over to them. But then in this latest round of negotiating and talks, they negotiated a 2012 release date.
Oh my, did they?
Yes, they did. And we had proposed 2009.
The U.S. had proposed.
Yeah, 2009. And then they said, oh no, 2012 would work for us because we don't have our stuff together yet. So.
Oh, gee.
So I just thought that was an interesting date to turn things back over to whoever's going to take over.
How does this make you feel about having your babies in school?
Well, you know, I feel extra motivated, I should say, to find another way. Part of what is frustrating about it is finding the alternative way. A lot of what's happening with homeschooling now is, you know, you still state by state are accountable to some of the same standards. Granted, the teaching techniques would be very different, but you're still accountable for a lot of the same content. So,
you know, I have a friend who has homeschooled both of her daughters. The one is now in college.
Sure.
Very early, very bright. The other one is almost through with school.
Mm-hmm.
And what this person, what her, their mother has done is told them what they're supposed to say to get through certain quizzes.
Sure.
And teaches them the truth.
Right.
So there's a way through it.
You bet. And
there's a way through it, Robert.
It's just finding, you know, the best approach to, you know, getting the information to them. It's, you know, it's difficult now. I know, you know, in the current learning environment they're both in, that, you know, they, even with just hanging around me in their environment, they you know, they tend to find themselves asking a lot of questions and getting a lot of no answers and getting frustrated with that.
Getting a lot of notes. Tell me what you mean by that, then.
I'm not interrogating.
You know,
well, like they'll give some fact in the classroom environment, and then, you know, my daughter will question it and say, "How do we know that? And where did we get that information?" And the teacher will just say, "Well, that's just what we're taught."
Asking you questions, but and getting no answers, but not getting them from the teacher.
Exactly.
Oh, thank you. I thought you were saying they were getting no answers from you.
No.
So then, do you give them the answers?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. We like to spend time and research stuff and understand, especially like I talked about this before, but when holidays are coming up, you know, one of the things we do is we like to go and really look up and find as much as we can the accurate information on the origin of the holiday so that we can understand what it's really about compared to what we're being said.
The ostensible purpose versus the real purpose.
Exactly. And then is it rooted in any historical fact or, you know, timeline that we can. And, you know, is it real? Did it happen? Most of the time it's not. Most of it's been moved around and reorganized for religious purposes and or, you know, shopping holidays and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we do the homework and then we know.
And then if they are studying the Civil War, you give them the facts about the Civil War and it wasn't about slavery,
yeah, exactly.
et cetera, et cetera.
exactly.
Okay.
And once you start to understand, and children are so very capable. I mean, and that's the other part that is very sad about all of this. Is the idea that, you know, we're only given limited information based on what they think we should know. And the human mind is an amazing thing, and we're all so capable of so much. We just aren't given access to the information. And it's easy to withhold information from somebody and then say, see how terrible they are, see how stupid they are, see how they can't even do this, when you're not giving them all of the things that they need to succeed. And granted, there are people that have certain aptitudes that are more developed, you know, based on their experience, their collective universal experience. But you know, that those people, you know, somehow sometimes will find stuff. But you can't do that for everybody. Everybody needs access, and that's the key. You can't give everybody half truths.
Well, you and I have talked many times on the phone when you're on the road and have had just really stimulating conversation, and so often it's on a spiritual, of a spiritual nature. Mm-hmm. And when I look at myself, I came into this world, I know I did, with knowings. Mm-hmm. It had to be recalled to my memory, but somewhere in there I knew. Mm-hmm. As I said, when I was 15 and started reading the Old Testament, and said, this is not true. Yeah. This is not God. And of course it is the God Jehovah, but probably an advanced being who is here. But I knew in my mind, that in my heart, that that wasn't so. I didn't know what was so. But the point is, my entire life has been a search for spiritual truth, while I have been totally brain dead about what was going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand that?
Do
you see what I'm saying, Robert?
I do.
And, oh, my God, my awakening. It was such a rude awakening. And then it occurred to me, in fact, I wrote this, I believe, in the very beginning of the book online there, Jewish Persecution,
mm-hmm.
that I see now that the reason we have to search for spiritual truth is because the truth has been withheld.
Okay.
But then once I got into this realm of it, it came full circle, realizing that that's the reason that the spiritual truths have been withheld,
mm-hmm.
so that people with the religions, you know, their beliefs and values, their behavior is totally controlled by the church. And the whole thing all enmeshes into one. Religion is the gemstone of the plan, their plan for world dominion. But, oh my, when I became awake to what's happening in this world, I felt like a stranger in a strange planet,
mm-hmm.
for a long, long time.
Yeah, you feel I felt isolated. I felt, you know, kind of out on a limb, like you're in this weird place watching this weird thing unfold. And but then, you know, with that, you know, with the sort of digestion or the metabolizing, I always think information is
mm-hmm.
like food. Once you become, you know, once you get to a place of acceptance with that information, from there you can start to see you have new confidence in your belief in that what you always knew was right.
Yes.
And then you're not so willing to listen to what everybody else has to say about your ideas and your thoughts, because you know for you that it's right. And that's really, you know, if you look back at all the things that happened in your life and all the things that could have gone wacky or gone wrong, and you're still here and you're still able to do something, you really should, and that's your purpose, and that's what they want to cover up.
That's exactly what I was thinking, my purpose. Our purpose. We all have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to know that we're here for a purpose. And, you know, that's an interesting thing, too, because I always knew that. I'm here for a reason, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
Now, I think we've been living our purpose all this time. We have to take a break here. We're going to be gone about 3 minutes, and folks, we'll be back with Robert Allen. You stay with us. And Robert, thanks again for being here tonight.
No problem.
Mm. I pledge allegiance to the King of Kings and to his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. One holy nation and our Heavenly Father, grace, mercy, justice for all.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
While we were on break, I was taking a look at this message again from the Course in Miracles, Robert.
Yes.
Nothing you undertake with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence, holding your brother's hand and keeping step to heaven's song is difficult to do. Nothing you undertake with all that is difficult to do. And it occurred to me that anybody who discovers what's happening to the children in the schools and decides that they are going to remove their children from that, that reminded me of this. Nothing you undertake with certain purpose and high resolve is difficult to do. And I just want, for any of our listeners, any of you who are listening to this and you have children that are in those indoctrination centers, they're in danger. Their minds are in danger. It is said that the mind is the gateway to the soul. And if that is true, then we would say, well, their very soul is at risk. Because eventually in their lives, they can be made to do just about anything and say, well, I just did what I had to do. It's like the people, that work for Children Family Services and go into somebody's home.
Yeah.
And they have to find something wrong, because every time, that they can pin somebody, there's a lot of money involved in that.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands of dollars. Those children are worth thousands to them if they can find something wrong and snatch a child out of a home.
Sure.
And the money comes from the government, of course.
Yeah.
And also, not only can they be made to do things that they would never be able to do unless their mind was totally torqued, but they can allow themselves to sit back and watch evil happen and not even be stirred to do anything because it isn't affecting them.
Right.
And I want our listeners to know that Darren has posted this. It was an email that I got. There's an organization called Iraqi Vets Against the War, and the boy's name, and I call him a boy, he doesn't look very far past his 20s. They interviewed him in his home. He and his wife and his 18-month-old baby, Jesse Macbeth. He's wearing his camos, and he said, "I wear these because I talk a lot." And he talks. His eyes look lost, but he talks without crying about it, about he personally being responsible just at least 200, maybe more people. And he told about, it's a video, it's a 21-minute video. I asked Darren if he could download the video in case it got lost in cyberspace. And he said it just wasn't that easy because it's a Google video. But he said he could, and I asked him, please do, to capture at least the audio on it. And this, he talked about how they were told to go into homes. That there's an insurgent in there. And he said they'd bust into this home, and there might be, it was a family, a father, a mother, a few children, sometimes the old people, the grandparents are there, and they start interrogating the man and asking him questions and tearing the house apart looking for weapons, which they never found.
Sure.
And then, okay, well, if he didn't answer and give them an answer they wanted, they'd start shooting maybe the youngest child first. And he described it, I mean, literally letting them feel the rifle against their forehead and then back off a little bit and then just blow them away. He blew babies away. He blew babies away, children, whole families, and they did it over and over and over and over again. He said, this one they went into, actually they had bombed, and they were supposed to go in there and bring out the dead, but what they were really told to do is make sure if anybody's alive, get rid of them first. And he said some people were barely injured because maybe they were hidden back someplace. And he said, I don't remember where this was, but he said there was a woman, and she was sitting with her children, two or three children. She had blood on her hands. One of her children had been shot, injured. And he said she was begging me and pleading with me to save her and save her and her children. And he said, I killed them all. I killed them all. They're speaking out against it, but he was doing it.
Yeah. Well, first off, the wars are horrible things, and they're always orchestrated, and we don't have any say in them. We're just the ones that are usually sent off, except for in situations like right now where we don't have a draft. These guys that are being sent are ones that chose to be there. But it's never a beautiful situation. It's just not. It's a shaping is what it is. And,
a shaping of the mind.
Well, it's a shaping of a new reality for the whole world, unfortunately.
Of the values.
Yeah.
I did what I had to do. He said I didn't speak out because finally, you know, he saw. He said, what is this? He said, what about all that stuff that we got? He's a ranger. He was a ranger. What about all the hype we got about what did they call it? Iraq. They were saving the Iraqis. Iraqis. What the heck? There's a word. Anyway, he said, we are the terrorists, and we're over there terrorizing the people. And he said, I'll tell you what. He said, if a foreign army came into America and they came into my home, he said, I'd do everything I could. I'd be doing what they're doing because they're killing too. They're killing to protect themselves.
Well, and the baseline and programming of all the soldiers, and I talked to quite a few of them.
The baseline what?
The baseline programming with all of the soldiers, the byline that they get installed in their mind over and over again so they can justify what they're doing is that they say, I would rather fight terror over there before it gets here. But
right.
So you know that that's just not even, there's no logic to that whatsoever.
Iraqi freedom, Iraqi liberation. It was called. He says we were supposed to be over there to liberate. And he said all the deaths that they report on the news. Oh, yeah. He said, I have seen piles, huge mounds of dead bodies of Iraqis, not even buried yet, you know, in the holes. He says, and then you see on the news where they say insurgents were taken out. He said they weren't insurgents. They were just families, children and mothers and fathers that were taken out.
Anybody who's against
yeah, an insurgent or an enemy.
Yeah.
He said he went over there gun-ho, believing that he was fighting for his country.
Yeah.
But my point is, the indoctrination starts in the school.
Well, it begins in the school system. You know, it definitely does. One interesting thing along those lines, both of my daughters came to me last year and said, Dad, we're supposed to be writing this soldier, you know, these notes, and we're all going to give them to him and do this stuff. And they said, we don't want to do it. And I said, you don't have to do it. So we didn't do it. But it was interesting that they were asking the students. It was purely voluntary, but, you know, there's a lot of peer pressure in that environment with young children. If, you know, you don't do it, why don't you want to write the soldier, you know, a letter thanking them for what they're doing for our freedom? And my daughters knew the difference. So.
Yes, and then they have to be careful on the answers because otherwise they're going to be singled out and they're going to be remediated.
Yeah.
And the remediation is very, very slick.
Yeah.
And they can twist those babies' minds.
Well, there's, you know, you get into, you know, a lot of teachers who you know, I've had conversations with this stuff about and think that it's just a bunch of bahu. I always say, why don't you do a little research on your friend, you know, Skinner there and understand a little bit more about, you know, his background and what he did to his own daughter.
Yeah, she committed suicide when she was 21.
Yeah, and because he's, you know, renowned as an expert in behavioral psychology. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of the doctrine woven into the teaching plan.
Kept her in a box.
Yeah, kept her in a box.
Kept her in a box, the Skinner box. That's what Charlotte Isherby calls it.
Mm-hmm. It is called the Skinner box.
The Skinner box.
Well, it's funny because you think about cribs. Cribs are not much different, you know.
About what? Prisoners?
Cribs.
Oh, cribs.
Yeah.
They got bars on them.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're in a square, too.
Oh, my. You know what? I never thought about that.
Isn't that funny? You know, I thought after I had read about him, I immediately thought about that. You know, and I remember at the same time I was reading about that, I was talking to my mother about it. She said I used to kick the rungs out
of the crib.
Of the crib.
You know what Nicole used to do, my younger daughter?
No.
Oh, ha! Huh. She was so little. She was such a little thing, and she walked early.
Yeah.
And I put her up for her nap one day. She started crying. And I was going to let her cry for a few minutes to see if she'd stop. And the next thing you know, I heard a thump on the floor. And I ran upstairs, and she was walking across the room. She got out of it. She climbed over it. And it was higher than her head. The, you know, the top of the crib bars.
Uh-huh.
And she climbed out of it.
My son used to do that, too. In the middle of the night, you hear the thump.
Yep.
What is that?
Yep.
Yeah.
There she came.
Yeah. So it's like, in one form or another, it's made its way, you know, slowly but surely.
I didn't put her back in it either, and I'll bet you didn't put your son back in it.
Yeah, no, eventually, you know, he would sleep with us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I put her back in that night. But I rocked them to sleep every night anyway. I sang to them and rocked them to sleep. So
I don't remember much about when the girls were being raised in no sleep zone, but not that I had the tough part of it, because I didn't. But it was a lot of one would get down and then the other one would wake up. So you wouldn't shift. So.
Yeah.
But it was great.
Twins, yeah, that's double duty, isn't it?
And they are beautiful.
Well, I hope that you will find a way. I hope that you will undertake it with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence.
I will.
Holding your brother's hand and keeping step to heaven's tongue, and it won't be difficult to do, Robert.
No, it never did. You know, it's funny, those things in your life, in my life, I'll speak for myself, that, you know, I originally thought, I could never do that. But then the minute you...
Speak up a little bit, honey.
I was going to say, the things in my life that I've looked at like that and said, hey, you know, I don't know if I can make that change. When I finally got to doing it, it was so much easier than I had originally anticipated or made it out to be.
Yes.
And so it's been so much more beneficial. So I agree with you.
My regret when my girls were growing up is that I didn't know, because I was in one of those generations that came after the silent generation.
Mm-hmm.
It was an innocent time, and other than the Korean, what did they call it? Action or conflict? It wasn't a war.
Conflict, yeah, it was a conflict.
It wasn't a war.
Yeah.
Because under international law, peacekeeping is not defined as war. I was told that. But it was an innocent time. And nobody was paying attention to anything except their own personal, their families, those who came back from the war, still alive and able to function.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, when I look back and I see what they did, I mean, the people, you know, through the 30s and into the 40s until the war started, and then all the factories wrapped up. But you see how they pulled off so much of their stuff during certain times when they had the people so oppressed,
mm-hmm,
that they couldn't think of anything but staying alive. And then when they weren't oppressed, that they were just wanting to live their lives with their families.
Yeah.
And so when my girls got in school, I thought this world was a lollipop, because I grew up in the 50s and that's what it was like, a lollipop. You see?
Yeah.
So I was asleep.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, at that point, because I wasn't there during that time, but just looking at what I can gather on, or my observations on that time period, was that it really was sort of a candy-coated time.
It was.
And
it was very innocent. There was the drugs. It wasn't until the 60s and the Beatles that, boy, and everything changed.
Sure.
And it changed so fast that I was aghast that little girls that I used to babysit, when I was, you know, I started babysitting at 11, and I'd hear about parties,
mm-hmm,
and the sex that was going on at parties, and I was like, oh my God, what is happening here?
Yeah.
But then I was busy raising my first child, see?
Yeah.
So there's where my attention was. But the way I see it, Robert, it's a shame when we're ignorant and we don't know, because so much happens that we aren't aware that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, for me, when a parent knows, and it's like the vaccines,
yeah,
and they actually know about it and they continue to vaccinate their children, oh, because they need it or they can't get into school. It doesn't compute for me.
Well, it's it's fear which equates in
what, pardon?
It's fear that equates or manifests itself as laziness, almost like a slow
apathy. Could we call it apathy?
Yeah, apathy.
Well, I say that every parent that knows about the vaccines and has the poison injected in the child
mm-hmm.
should submit themselves to the same vaccine.
Sure.
I mean it.
No.
If they're willing to have their child injected with aluminum and mercury and all of the live viruses that go into these things that have nothing to do with what they're ostensibly being vaccinated for, let them inject you with that poison. Are you willing?
Well, you know, the scary part is that, if you're conscious and you allow that to happen, that's one thing. But a lot of people just don't know. They really are conditioned.
I understand that. What I'm talking about are the people who know.
Sure.
And it's
sure.
like people when you... Now, if an adult wants to brush their teeth with poison,
right.
And they know they're doing it, that's one thing. But when you have children and you show an adult, their parent, the warning on the toothpaste tube, every toothpaste tube that has fluoride in it, warning, keep out of the reach of children under six.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, right.
Well, almost every household product is like that.
Yeah, but wait, the thing is, it's right on the tube.
It is.
But we don't read it. I had never read it. My babies were brushing their teeth with fluoride toothpaste.
Yeah.
As soon as they got their little teeth, I taught them to brush. I didn't read that tiny little print on the damn tube.
Yeah.
But what I'm talking about is once you see it and you go, oh, my God, not only does it say keep out of the reach of children under six, it says if you swallow more than enough for brushing, contact a physician or call a poison center at, and there's a number there, I think. Call a poison, and then... And then they don't get non-fluoride toothpaste for their children.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't compute for me.
Sure.
Now, if you want to poison yourself and pay for your poison, that's your choice. But when you have a child entrusted to your care, which is the most sacred to me thing that we could experience as a human being, that child is entrusted into our care, and if we don't do everything within our power to protect that child, when we know that, I want to qualify that
mm-hmm.
because I got my children vaccinated because I love them.
Right.
You see, I understand this. I'm talking about those who know, Robert.
Right. Well, and in the process of getting everybody to know and waking up sometimes is take time too. So,
I understand that. That's.
But you're right. I understand what you're saying. For anybody who does have that,
I've
knowledge,
showed it to people, and they go, "I didn't know that."
Exactly.
And they just keep right on using the fluoride toothpaste, and their children are brushing their teeth with it.
Exactly. And you know, and all of this is designed for back to what we're talking about for one reason, is to continue to just chip away at. The individual's soul and purpose in this place.
Let's take a look at this. Maybe these parents that are doing this, even in the face of getting the information,
mm-hmm.
I believe that it is the result of the brainwashing they went through as children in the indoctrination centers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something is done to their minds, to their brains, that shuts off something.
Or it overrides or it creates...
That overrides, thank you,
yeah.
Yes. And that's why, right now, what we're talking about are children today.
Right.
Get them the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Get them the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Or let them stay in school and take part in the... Combative classes. And think that, oh, my child is immune from it because she or he knows.
Sure.
I told you about my friend who sent her daughter to college.
Yeah.
And she called me crying on the telephone before the, I guess, the first half of the her freshman year. Mm-hmm. I don't know her anymore.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what her daughter told her. You don't know me anymore, Mom. I'm different. I've lost her. And yet she continued to put her into college. I said, who's paying for it?
Yeah, if you think about not only that, but if you think about the amount of time, the sheer amount of time, and they say they don't need that much time, but if you just think about the amount of time the child's exposed to that environment, and it's growing.
And it's more intense in college.
Yeah.
And the thing that blew me away, I said, who's paying for her tuition? She said, we are. I said, then quit paying for it. If she wants to go to college, let her get a job and put herself through.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be part of it.
Sure.
But it didn't stop.
Well, because that's still a conditioned idea about, you know, the order of how people need to, or what people need to go through in order to fit in and be successful in society. You know, the school to work program, you know, where you go to school and then you go to college, you get your degree and then you go to work for a company. And that idea, that paradigm still exists, even though more and more companies are laying off and are eliminating jobs, and the college degrees don't mean as much as they
don't mean anything.
And the college degrees are more expensive than they've ever been.
Yes.
So it's, you know, you're working so much harder to try and prepare for that time when the child.
Did you go to college?
I actually went for one semester and then dropped out.
One semester. I never even wanted to go to college.
Yeah.
And I was my the dean of girls. It brought me down and said, Jackie, you have to go to college. First, our principal, you have to go to college. I said, I don't want to go to college, Mr. Baker. I just want to be a secretary.
Right.
And then Mrs. Alden brought me down, our dean of girls, and she says, Jackie, you have to go to college, if nothing else, to find a man of your caliber. I said, I don't want to go to college, Mrs. Alden. I just want to be a secretary. And
yeah,
I became a secretary.
That was a belief system, too, was
yes.
That you would go to college to meet your husband.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I became a secretary, and then guess what? I wound up owning my own business.
Sure.
And I've my Nicole went to a secretarial school in St. Louis in 10 months, and when she was out, she got a very, very good and high-paying job. And they said that most a very large percentage of business owners, women,
mm-hmm.
were secretaries first.
Yeah. You probably watched all of the dysfunction.
Well, you take care of your boss.
Yeah, exactly.
I was a private personal secretary to the owner and general manager of a radio station.
Yeah.
And I wound up owning my own business. You don't need college.
No, you don't.
And we're out of time, Robert.
Huh?
Well, we don't run out of time when we're talking during the day, do we?
No, we don't.
Unless my phone runs out of juice. Thank you for being here, honey.
Well, thanks for having me back again.
I hope that you will undertake, with certain purpose and high resolve and happy confidence, getting your precious babies out of the damn indoctrination centers. And every one of our listeners listening right now, folks, we'll be back with you next Wednesday. Thank you for being here. And Robert, thank you again, honey. Okay, bye. Good night, folks.
Who are you? That is the question, and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are,